Tomorrow, the Flood. From There Is Nothing to Fear by Santiside. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of J.K. Rowling.
Chapter 8. Harry Prince. Pathological Liars. Under most circumstances, Harry would have been happy to return home. And one might think he'd be doubly happy to return in one piece after falling into, and botching, an international plot of intrigue and assassination. But there was a little part of him that thought he might have had an easier time in the graveyard than he was about to have now. In the graveyard, after all, he had been fortunate enough to be unconscious. The man beside him looked nothing extraordinary. Brown hair cut smartly, sturdy and long-limbed, well-groomed without drawing attention, the spitting image of a passenger they had encountered on the express train, a few hairs of whose had been purloined on that ride by the man who, at that time, had worn an altogether different semblance, blonder and fatter. He claimed to be Albus Dumbledore. The very same from the stories Severus had told, though Harry had only seen his real face in passing. In his left hand was a leather traveling trunk with a steel handle and 7 keyholes, and in his jacket pocket, Harry had seen, was a long pearwood wand. The door in front of them was a deep, oceanic blue, and the overhang cast a shadow that cooled more than it darkened. Harry could see the perimeter of the garden from here, full of nourishing and healthful things, and poisonous ones, because every medicine could kill, and many poisons could sometimes help. The wind carried with it the sounds and smells of Copenhagen, salt and cinnamon, and a hint of the evening's sewage stink, bicycle bells and harbor buses. Harry should have felt relief to be so close to home. Instead, he found a still, small space within himself, and keeping in mind Severus's admonition to not rely overly much on occlumency for emotional control, therein stowed his deepest and sharpest feelings.
"He's going to be real mad," Harry noted.
"I'm sure that he will," Dumbledore said, as lightly as if Harry had mentioned that Severus was probably going to offer them a lemon sherbet. Which he might, if the lemon sherbet would sicken Dumbledore, which it might, if Severus had made it. Dumbledore's knock, da-da-da-da-da-da, was answered almost immediately. Severus couldn't have answered much more quickly had he been lying in wait at the door, lean, gaunt, and haggard, on balance, rather the worse for wear compared to how Harry remembered him, but his physical meanness notwithstanding, he seemed to fill the threshold. And no further, like some sort of reverse vampire who couldn't exit without invitation.
"You goat fucker!"
Severus snarled. 0 to 99 in a time span that would have impressed a Dragonfly 86.
"Was it not enough for you that you ran his parents into their graves, that you ran from the country, that—"
There was the thinnest gap between Severus and the doorframe, almost as narrow as the odds that Harry might fly through this unscathed, but they were the only odds he had, and Harry, to the best of his ability, tried to be nonchalant as he motioned to be allowed through. The trick, he had learned this past year, was to act like everything was normal, and also imbibe copious amounts of polyjuice potion. Perhaps it had been a mistake this time to leave out the polyjuice potion.
"And you!" Severus bit out.
"And me," Harry acknowledged, still hoping, because there was nothing left but either hope or resignation, that he could nonchalance his way through this scenario. Severus, however, had no intention of lightening up.
"You deliberately disobeyed me!"
It was a moment of stillness, in the eye of a hurricane, and Harry tried to present his case in the most straightforward manner possible. "I was trying to save my father," he said, acknowledging in his heart that he had not only failed to ask whether Severus wanted saving, but deliberately failed to ask because he knew what the answer would be.
"Your father is already dead. Both of your parents are dead,"
Severus snarled, with a withering look at Dumbledore. "Two of them, you mean? Both implies I've got just two," Harry said.
"You're babbling nonsense," Severus said sharply. "Have you been concussed?"
"Yes, actually, but I'm better now," Harry said. "Anyway, you can claim otherwise, but I can read between the lines," Harry continued. "I don't know exactly what it might have looked like, how it would have worked out or not worked out, if all three of you had lived. Maybe you would be Uncle Sev, and maybe you would be my pops. But the way that it actually worked out, there's my mother, and there's my father, and there's my father."
and I had to save you.
Idiot child,
Severus said. Dumbledore looked concerned, but Harry had to suppress a smile.
What do you have to say for yourself?
Some Occlumencies put stock in something called the Memory Palace. Severus had never held a high regard for the concept. It was only a mnemonic technique, not proper Occlumency, but something of the idea had found purchase in Harry long ago. He did not wander imagined corridors and chambers in order to remember who he was supposed to be today, nor envision mighty ramparts against which his opponents loosed their thoughts in vain, but Harry fancied that there was a little room inside his mind where he could put the thoughts that he could not think. I might have made some errors of judgment, Harry admitted, and I misplaced myself, but I was trying to save you, Severus. And it was not as if Severus were the only person with a stake in the question. Had Harry failed to ask him whether he wanted to be saved, very well. But he had failed to ask Harry whether his death, even this living death to which he had sentenced himself, was acceptable. There were two parties to this, or three, if Riddle were considered, or was Dumbledore also? No, better to stick with two. There were two parties, himself and Severus.
What reason did I have to be afraid? I was a simple squib, content merely if my... If you got a decent education.
Severus hardly moved from his position against the doorframe. Whatever noose there was around my neck, did you even remove it?
Or have you only put a knife to my throat?
Harry winced, and resisted the temptation to put the pain out of his mind. Severus had a point. But even so, you can't tell me you were happy.
He hasn't brewed a potion or touched his wand in years, Harry said to Dumbledore, realizing that the other wizard could do to be filled in on a few details.
It isn't just an act. I mean, he doesn't just play a squib when other people are around. A squib can't lay down any of the wards that could keep a wizard out, so he decided to pretend for every minute of the day.
Severus looked away from him.
Idiot child,
he said again, as if the word might eventually sting. Harry knew three languages, at least well enough to converse in them, and he knew a thing that most wizards only understood about incantations. Words were just sounds.
Chiaragut, idiotban.
Dear boy, they could all mean the same thing.
What do you think my life would be worth to me if I outlived you? He asked.
Dumbledore smiled bittersweetly beneath the face that he had borrowed.
I regret all the circumstances that brought us together on your doorstep, but I am glad to see that you survived, and Harry as well. His expression grew more painful.
You have my condolences about Miss Evans.
Severus's exhaustion transformed again to cold anger.
I would rather have your immediate departure.
And I will immediately depart, Dumbledore assured him, just as soon as my business here is complete.
Catch ill and die, Severus said. You have no business here.
His expression softened for a bare second. It was something to do with the area around his eyes. Probably nobody but Harry could have caught the change, as slight and short-lived as it was.
You returned Harry to me. I thank you for that, but if you think that I feel any goodwill for you on that account, then you fail to understand how much I am still owed, how much Lily and James are owed, before anything that you do can even settle the account between us, let alone put me in your debt.
Even James, Dumbledore smiled. But surely you have not begun to think that I could have saved him. The days which we snatched from death for him were miraculous enough. There were limits to what I could do and to what he could bear. Tell me that James wouldn't hate you if he knew what had happened to Lily and Harry.
His hatred and hers and yours do not measure against my own self-recrimination,
Dumbledore said. Tom Riddle and I were not the sole actors in the war, which was not even a simple conflict between us, but there were many ways that, by action and inaction, I contributed to our failure.
How grand of you to admit it, Severus replied. I do not have a sword at hand, but I would be willing to acquire one if you wished to fall upon it. Otherwise, we have no business together.
I'm not coming inside without him, Harry declared. You're in no position to negotiate.
Also, you don't have a wand on you. And Mr. Dumbledore is the greatest wizard in the world.
While I appreciate your faith, man.
He isn't yours!
The words lashed from Severus's mouth like a snake in ambush.
Just let us in, Severus, both of us,
Harry emphasized, in case Severus was about to argue for a singular interpretation of us, please. Severus was still for a moment, and Harry wondered, vainly, because the world did not hold in it a better Occlumens than his father, what Severus was considering.
Because he asked,
Severus said,
his eyes locked with Dumbledore's. Do not think for a moment that if you abuse your welcome, I will not attempt to throw you from the house.
Fury had done nothing to weaken his precision. Wandless against the greatest wizard of the century, of course, Severus knew that he could do nothing but attempt to enforce his will if Dumbledore disregarded it. He absented himself from the doorway, like a trapdoor spider withdrawing into its den. The sitting room was a complex of white and soft browns, wooden from floor to ceiling, and a splash of dark green, courtesy of the snake plant beside one window. The cracks in the beams belied their strength. They had performed with distinction since Harry was old enough to remember them. It was thick with a smell like cough syrup, which suggested that the Jeroboam of blackberry whiskey on the center table had been gainfully employed since the morning. There were only two chairs, because Severus never played host, not even for his most tolerable students at the hotel and restaurant school, and Harry cared too much for both Severus and his local friends to inflict either of them on the other. Then Dumbledore set down his trunk, rifled through it for a long minute, and pulled out a green Windsor chair.
"You keep a chair in your trunk?" asked Harry.
"I have not had the liberty of remaining settled for very long," Dumbledore said. "It often suffices for quick, simple comforts. And I've often been in want of those."
"You have my unbounded sympathy," Severus said,
and he lowered himself into his ragged armchair. "In this country, a welcoming host would put away your shoes, adjust the atmosphere to your liking, and offer a plate of licorice biscuits," he continued, just before he did none of that. While taking his own seat in the room's rocking chair, Harry glanced at the snake plant beside the window. Its dark greenery was slowly giving ground to pale browns and a sickly yellow, doubly surprising for Severus's green thumb and the snake plant's natural propensity for weathering miscare. The length of its neglect was far greater than just a few days.
"How long were you worrying?" he asked.
"Since March." March, that would have been the fourth attempt, the one where he had actually, carefully, like putting fine china away in a little cabinet. Harry willed himself to set aside the thought. Breathe in, breathe out, he was here and not there.
"You don't think that could have been somebody else, do you?"
"I taught you that curse, fool that I was. Of course I knew that it was you."
"I just thought," Harry said, but he trailed off for too long.
"Clearly not," Severus observed. "I mean, couldn't it have been a really big severing charm or something? Hypothetically, I mean, I won't pretend that it wasn't me."
"Thank God that we will be spared that futile exercise," Severus said. "To answer your question, there was a précis in the post-mortem review, and a lengthier autopsy report, in Detailich Malaklik, which elaborated on the subsequent investigation. The informed view," he explained, "is that the spell was a derivation of the Woodman's Curse, some type that had a more subtle edge. But few of the facts are inconsistent with that position."
Severus nursed the tumbler in his hand for a few seconds, then continued.
"In particular, my attention was drawn to the fact that the blood continued to flow and the flesh refused to reknit itself even after the corpse was instilled with vitalitas. Most of the authorities ascribed this to a contamination of the matter, but I understood what it meant." His frown deepened. "I should never have taught that spell to you, not if it emboldened you to this course of action."
"I probably would have gone anyway," Harry replied. "I mean, it wasn't even the first thing that I tried, or the last." That didn't seem to help Severus's mood, but little did.
"Why did you teach such a severe curse to him in the first place?"
Dumbledore questioned. "He's only a boy."
"I'm turning 15 next month,"
Harry pointed out, but he might as well have stayed silent for all that Severus or Dumbledore seemed to hear him.
"For his protection," Severus said. "It was a novel spell. Even a wizard like Riddle would not have known exactly what to expect or how to best counter it, so he may have exercised a modicum of caution. It neatly slices through several conventional methods of protection, and its injuries are difficult to treat. In the right situation, it could have bought Harry a few seconds."
"To run away," Harry said, attempting his very best impression of Severus himself. Again, no one appreciated his efforts.
"I've told you over and over again," Severus snapped, lurching. "I have no expectation that you can survive in single combat against Riddle, let alone beat him. The only victory is retreat."
"But you told me that when you thought he had killed Dumbledore, who isn't dead," Harry added, he's sitting here with us. You made your assassination attempt. Attempts, plural, in fact. But Harry wasn't about to correct Severus on that now. Before you were in possession of that fact, Severus observed, and whatever the details may be, Dumbledore still failed to kill him. That was mostly my fault, Harry admitted. I had a bit of a tumble, don't ask why, that's not the point, but it was a completely reasonable chain of events, and I'd sort of got in the way. It was a blessing that he wasn't awake to remember it for himself, or to have made things worse. But that won't be a problem next time.
There will not be a next time,
Severus replied. You can't, Harry began. Severus is largely correct, Dumbledore interrupted. At this juncture, another attempt on Riddle's life is simply not in the cards.
But you almost succeeded last time. You would have succeeded if I hadn't mucked it up.
That single attempt took years of preparation, compromised the safety and position of my most invaluable partner in Britain, and killed the best and most talented of my friends. Dumbledore closed his eyes, and Harry, with one figurative hand clutched tight around the doorknob to his memory cupboard, dared not interrupt. Even if all these things were not true, a second attempt would lack the most crucial ingredient, surprise. We cannot simply make monthly attempts on his life until one finally succeeds. Riddle will not lower his guard like that until he is certain that I am dead. Harry looked back and again between Severus and Dumbledore. I thought that he already... Why have you been drinking so much polyjuice if Riddle doesn't think you're dead? He asked. In the short time that he and Harry had been together, Dumbledore had been quaffing the stuff like Severus with a bottle of whiskey and an evening of bad memories. Tom Riddle was unable to acquire direct intelligence of our efforts, but he remains alive and able to question the facts of our duel at Hogwarts. If we are lucky, then Riddle will develop a theory that permits him to continue thinking that I am dead. But we were unlucky once already. We may be unlucky every time, Dumbledore emphasized. It will be more prudent to assume that he now believes that I am still alive. If nothing else, we can be certain that he will consider it prudent to operate as if I may still be alive. Then what are we going to do? Harry asked. I thought you had a plan. Riddle is determined to incite a war. I do not know why, but that is no matter, Dumbledore said. It is enough to know that he wants it. Then you're going to stop him. I couldn't even if I wanted to, and I do not want to, Dumbledore said. The shape and direction of his war will provide useful information. But what I can and will do is constrain the size of the war.
That sounds like giving up, Harry said. If he wants a war, then why not make him lose that war?
With what army?
Anybody who hates him, I suppose.
I tried that once, Dumbledore said. It might have been my greatest mistake. There may be no wizard who is more dangerous than Tom Riddle. None who I am less interested in seeing in a position of absolute power, but there is no shortage of vicious, wicked men who likewise oppose him. Men whose sole redeeming quality is that they are less competent. And the cold geometry that I laid out was no comfort to the people that were enchained and oppressed in that moment. Dumbledore was quiet for a moment, and then he sighed. However many people listened to Riddle from the first, there were more who were driven to support him because I broke bread with the likes of Abraxas Malfoy, he continued. This is to say that the fact of war itself will be to Riddle's advantage. It does not matter that 2/3 of the world might be arranged against him if the other third have gathered around him. But you could beat him then, couldn't you?
You would think so.
A wizard of Riddle's stature can substitute for many lesser wizards, but one wizard cannot be everywhere, and even the sharpest sword can be dulled by dust. Even so, I do not think that he would be destroyed, only driven underground. Dumbledore shook his head. That is an environment in which he has already proven himself adept.
That doesn't mean that the right thing is doing nothing, Harry insisted.
Riddle is a creature of violence, Dumbledore said. It is his natural element, like the Ashwinder in fire. If he is to be destroyed, then we must bring to bear more than violence. We must constrain him at every turn and lay siege to the systems that empower him.
Do you mean,
letting werewolves go to school, that sort of thing? Dumbledore shook his head. It is good and proper to respect the rights of other beings, even those that many people would consider dark. It is no more unlawful for a vampire to exist than it is for a parcel mouth, and they are no more inherently a creature of dark magic. You may consider it paradoxical, but Riddle depends on prejudice and hatred. Non-human beings would not have flocked to him if human beings did not consider themselves superior. And Muggleborns would not have called him their savior if there had been nothing from which they needed to be saved. In a free world, a just world, Riddle would have nothing to his name but the horrors.
It would be quicker and less painful to slit our throats now, Severus remarked.
If that's what you think is best, Mr. Dumbledore, then you can count on me. Harry said it not a little reluctantly, but Dumbledore was the strategic genius, or at least he had come closer than Harry ever had to beating Riddle. If not for Harry himself, it was no good to think about that, and Harry wrested his thoughts from that direction.
You will not assist him, Severus said. I forbid you.
You can't prevent me from doing anything that Mr. Dumbledore wants me to do, Harry said, and he glanced to Dumbledore, hoping that Dumbledore wouldn't demand parental permission.
He will be safer with me, Dumbledore said. That is only true if you can duel better than I can hide, Severus said.
War is coming, Dumbledore replied.
It is easier to hide in a war.
Only if the undergrowth has not all been burned.
I'm not going to hide.
One of the people die, Harry said. If it weren't for me, the Riddle would already be dead.
Listen to him, Severus said. After all you have done, do you have no shame filling his head with dreams of guilt and glory? It's about doing what's right,
Harry exclaimed.
You should be proud, Severus.
You raised a good young... Severus lunged forward with the quickness of an asp, and in the next moment Dumbledore's face was red where Severus had slapped him.
You have no right!
He roared, face contorted in fury.
You have no!
Then very suddenly he fell silent, staring at his hand, hanging in the air, fingers growing tight, as if constricting around Dumbledore's throat or clenching into a fist. For a moment Harry felt as if he had been pinned in the air waiting for Dumbledore to retaliate. The moment passed. And then another. And Harry, and perhaps Severus, understood that Dumbledore would do nothing of the sort. When he raised his hand, it was as if to adjust a set of spectacles.
If you actually believe that beating me will soothe you, then by all means continue, he said. Six of the bravest, noblest witches and wizards I had the privilege to know are now dead. Half a dozen more gravestones atop a cemetery of others. I dare say I do not hate myself as much as you do. You have a talent for it, Severus, but do not make the mistake of thinking that I am happy to be alive.
Slowly. And then all at once, Severus lowered himself and collapsed into his chair. Still looking at his hand, now clutched tightly around the end of an armrest.
I am doing the work, because it must be done, and I am there to do it, Dumbledore said. However much I may agree that it would be better for others to be alive in my place.
And I'm going to help him, Harry added. And there's nothing that you can do to change that, Severus. Even if Dumbledore changes his mind, I'll still go out there and find some way to help people. But I asked Dumbledore to bring us here because I wanted you to come too.
Severus closed his eyes for a moment, then turned to Harry.
Do you know that you are asking me to die?
I'm not doing that at all,
Harry said. You don't know.
Either you will die,
which will destroy me, I admit it, or I will die to protect you, Severus said. And then, in all likelihood, you will die not long after that. Dumbledore says that he will protect you, but you cannot believe him.
Severus thrust a hand in Dumbledore's direction. He will not let 1,000 strangers die to preserve your life.
He will not let 1,000 strangers die to preserve your life.
He will not let 50 die, or 45, or 5.
But Severus would, Harry understood. More than that, Severus might not merely let them die, but make them die.
I'm sorry you can forget it. I'm not asking anymore. I mean, you don't have to...
And now you ask me to sit at home, whiskey in my hand, wondering whether I will drown in my glass before I receive notice of your death.
What do you want from me?
I want you to understand the cost. You claim to have done these things for my sake, but if that is really true, then you cannot continue down this path. There is only one thing that can possibly keep me safe and sane.
It isn't about you anymore, Harry admitted. It was, but it isn't.
More people are going to die because of me, because Riddle is alive. I can't run away from that.
That does not sound as if it is our problem, Severus said, looking intently at Harry.
Riddle has the cloak of invisibility, Severus, Dumbledore said. His tone was soft, as if he were informing a first-year student of the fact of their Crump's death. It should have been lost in the wilds of Northumberland, and not in Normandy, wrapped around a boy with a remarkable resemblance to the last man to hold it. He will inevitably conclude that James survived and fathered a son.
If Riddle took the cloak already, then what need does he have to pursue the boy any further?
Severus's tone was bitter. He clearly knew the answer. James could only have lived with adept magical assistance. If James lived, then the proof of his death was false, and this, too, could not have been fabricated by just any wizard. The fact of his survival means that I was involved, which means that I knew what Riddle sought. Riddle will desire to know the rest of the story. And there was a long silence, which Harry felt too awkward to break. I should have taken you to Australia, Snape finally said. I should have homeschooled you myself and kept you away from the world. I should have disappeared with you into the feral places of America and let you grow up like a wild seed. I should have told you nothing. Obliviated myself as well, buried us for the ages. Maybe, Harry allowed. But if Riddle is putting on the war paint now, he might have caught up to us anyway. He had no reason to chase after us until this month. Well, Harry said. He tried. Harry hated to admit it, but Severus sort of had a point. He couldn't even absolve himself with good intentions, could he? Good people didn't hide themselves from their friends. Good people didn't commit crimes while wearing their friends' faces. So what did Harry know about doing the right thing? I will go, Severus said, neatly interrupting Harry's thoughts. Don't thank me for it, he said, just before Harry could. He rose from his chair as if the act took great effort, then went down to the cellar. Harry followed, knowing his purpose, and from behind a few bricks in the cellar, Harry drew out glass retorts and silver pestles and a gold-plated cauldron and a wand, made of pine but stained mahogany 9 inches long. Harry knew that wand nearly as well as his own, for all that he hadn't seen it for several years. More than anything but an empty cauldron, that wand, or rather its absence, signified the price that Severus had paid to keep Harry safe, making a squib of himself for nothing more than the slightest chance that it might extend Harry's lifespan. If nothing else, Harry succeeded in as much as Severus held that wand again. It was a more bitter event than he had anticipated. The wand seemed to have a weight that belied its appearance. Severus hadn't held it, hadn't looked at it perhaps, might even have barred himself from any thought of it for as long as Harry had been at Durmstrang. You told us that Riddle sought a wand as well, Severus said at last. Has that also fallen into his hand? There was a moment in which Dumbledore seemed to look a far way off, and then he answered. I destroyed it. Severus said nothing. In that manner of his that suggested unimpressed disdain, but which Harry understood as a sort of resentful approval. He was never short on caustic commentary. Silence could be a compliment more golden than anything that might be put towards. What's this about a wand? Asked Harry.
That is entirely outside of your concern, Severus said at the same moment that Dumbledore said. That is a story that is best left for a better time.
Which, reading between the lines a little, sounded to Harry like old wizard speak for, that is entirely outside your concern. Harry didn't know everything that had passed between Severus and Dumbledore, but he could glean that Severus had expected Dumbledore to keep the wand, whatever it was. But since they had finally found some mutual ground, Harry decided to leave it alone for now.
Something must remain, Severus said meanwhile. There must be bodies, and they must hold up to scrutiny.
I can accomplish the first and much of the second, Dumbledore said, but that may not be sufficient. It is a stratagem that can work only so many times.
It will work for as long as it works, Severus replied. We will do the work, and then assume that it bought us no more time than we spent.
Covering their trail was a complicated process. Some ingredients, ginseng, resin of dragon's blood, were already on hand, in Dumbledore's trunk or Severus's garden. Others, red mercury, tree of Adam, required that Dumbledore visit the apothecaries in Malmer. Less than 50 kilometers away, but on the other side of the sound, on the strait that lay between Denmark and Sweden. While he made that journey and Severus prepared a proper workplace, Harry went out to purchase those few ingredients that could be obtained from Muggles, even if the names were sometimes different, and Severus had to translate them into Mugglese. Petroleum, pickling lime, and salt of wormwood, and 80 kilos of pork scratchings, sausage, mince, and hamburger loin. Anything of a swinish nature, really, from Superbrooksen. When Harry returned, Dumbledore was back as well, bespectacled and bearded now that his polyjuice had ceased to work. He and Severus were chopping, dicing, and strangulating as necessary. "We did this for your other father," Dumbledore commented. His fingers closed like a cage around a mandrake's heart. Severus scowled.
"How do we need more bile?" he said, as if Dumbledore's words were a curse to be deflected.
It was gruesome work, made gruesomer when Severus dug the tip of a silver dagger into his forearm and let his blood flow out into a leaden pot. Harry had to shed his own blood not long after, though Severus still held the blade and kept it steady.
"Is this dark magic?" asked Harry. "It is elementary alchemy," Severus answered, "or perhaps intermediate. We're only making meat, and bone, and other things,"
Harry noted as Dumbledore measured the flow of his blood into the cauldron.
"The process is largely the same, differing chiefly in the ingredients," Severus said. "Now hand me a pipette of Philosopher's Quicksilver, 2 drams, he added.
And Harry fetched it just as soon as Dumbledore mended his arm. "The transubstantiation of flesh can be turned toward terrible ends," Dumbledore said, "and I would not spread the knowledge freely, but it is not in itself dark." It was hard for Harry to look at his arm, deharmed, but still red and slick with his blood, and not think about Hermione's arms, painted red, nearly black, and encrusted with the dried gore of an hour past, when she was sliced and skewered by the thorn pit she had descended. It was very hard, and all without mention of the other nightmares of the third task and its aftermath. Harry had an easier time if he could talk about something else, so he did. Never mind that even Dumbledore seemed less and less welcome of chit-chat during complex alchemical procedures. The apparata of their project were no less varied than the ingredients, crystal vials, maceration vessels, atheners and avidals, and a great black cauldron into which Dumbledore thrust his arm, and from which he drew out a limp, grimy body, like a fisherman on the River of Souls. Beneath the muck and dross was a face that had almost become a stranger to Harry, his own.
"Set it out on the floor by one of the chairs," Severus said, "and there's no need to clean it before we start the fire."
The stare of the homunculus was unsettling, but hardly noteworthy. Some corpses had open eyes. Then it blinked.
"Fire?" asked Harry. "An electrical fire will raise no suspicion in itself," Severus said.
"I'll be cleaning the tools.
I'm a few years out of practice, but I can make certain that no other houses will be in danger."
Dumbledore, however, seemed to catch the direction of Harry's gaze.
"There are a battery of tests that can be performed to tell whether a lump of matter ever held the spark of life," Dumbledore explained. "It was crucial that we simulate the full process of life. But you have my assurance that these concoctions hold nothing more developed than a vegetable soul. Sundews move as well."
"Right," Harry said, as the homunculus slowly blinked again.
"Sundews," he said.
And he put away his discontentment in the memory cupboard. The blankness in its gaze was not only his imagination, Harry told himself. Severus's doppelganger was laid down haphazardly beside Harry's, and Severus dressed both doubles with a couple of switching spells, so that the muggles would find melted plastic where they expected to find it. The equipment was packed up into Dumbledore's trunk, along with a few possessions that Severus or Harry couldn't part with, and Dumbledore passed around little vials of polyjuice. Harry grew, Severus shrank, Dumbledore lost hair, and felt almost familiar. To be in a body so unfamiliar, to no longer be in his own skin. Harry went outside with Dumbledore. Behind them, Severus cast a final spell, then followed them out. Beneath the cover of a disillusionment charm, they stood outside and kept watch, to ensure that their preparations had been sufficient. Harry smelled the fire before he saw it. Charcoal and sulfur, burnt leather and blackened pork, sick and sweet. An odor so thick that it choked his tongue. Then a light flickered through the windows, dancing as it grew. And the flames emerged at last, while smoke ascended as from a burnt sacrifice.
"I have a sizable life insurance policy. That is to say, if the muggles decide that I have died, they're supposed to pay a great sum of money to Harry. In the fact of your own death, however," Severus said to Harry, "the payment will be given to someone named Morten Nielsen, another identity that I prepared for you in case you wanted to disappear into a purely muggle life. But if Nielsen cannot be found within 6 months, then the money will be donated to the Hotel and Restaurant School to fund a scholarship for international students.
Severus extended his hand, and Harry took it in his own, and then the world turned darker than night and smaller than sand, and squeezed him hard enough to press yolk from a stone.
For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the Archive of Our Own page of Call Me Saltiside. The music is Amon-Ra by Dayswitch, under a Creative Commons license, with assistance from 1T1. If you would like to commission me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at sangabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as links to my Patreon page, to which I hope you consider subscribing to support me, and my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.